On today's Bill of the Flitter Show, episode 111, Bottom Round Roast, Political Conspiracy, Umbrellas, and Apples. All of this and more. The Flitter Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. Mmm, a low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. Mmm. Kids, welcome to the Flatus Show. Jose, my co-host, is actually walking around the house in his Selegiline. Has his brain craves Selegiline, you know, because he has Kena and cognitive disorder. He's walking around. He keeps on pawing at the door. I don't know what he wants, but he's a good boy. Well, anyway, welcome to the Flatus Show. This is Kenty. You can reach me at 206-984-3617. Put that in your cell phone and call me whenever you, when you're listening to this and want to say something. you can also, okay, yeah, hold on. Reach me. You can also reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com. I also urge my listeners to go to the iTunes store and find the Flatus Show and write a review. I haven't looked this week to see if anybody new has done that. I have had several people put a review in, so I want to thank everybody who has done that. Let's see here. Where is it? On my iPod. Under F for Flatus Show. So let's check that out. Oh, well, let's continue here. Bumpers, if you want, I'm asking you to send me a bumper to identify the show, and you can hear what other people have done. I got a new one this week. Thank you, JW. You're a sweetheart. Let me make a note here. Okay, let me take a look here. See who else has written a review. Okay, no one has. The last person is Ace and Chip. Thank you, Ace and Chip. I know your name, but I can't remember it. But okay, I'm also looking. Your listeners who subscribe to my show also subscribed to, for whatever reason, Spanking B. Arthur, Tiggercast, Frozen Dreamer, and The Malcontent. So I want to look up Frozen Dreamer, because that sounds provocative. Frozen Dreamer, huh? Personal Dreamer. Okay, I'm going to subscribe to Frozen Dreamer. And let's see, let me go back here and do the other one, Malcontent. For whatever reason, I'm already subscribed to. And actually, I've subscribed to Spanking B. Arthur. And, okay, there's nothing listed for the Malcontent podcast. So, that's interesting. There's nothing here. Uh-huh. Let's look at the website. And what was I saying? Tiggercast, too. I'm already subscribed to those podcasts. Okay, so it's exciting. I want to find out who's listening. Okay. The Malcontent. Let's see what it says here. Okay. This is a good show today. Today I didn't really know what I was going to talk about. And you know, basically I've talked about a few things. Doris Lessing is one. And I did updates because I couldn't think of a way of talking about another thing. October is National Coming Out Month. I talked about coming out and how I feel, and it's not just feel, but have reasons, have seen the writing on the wall, how I have been discriminated against in the workplace because I'm gay. Because I'm out. Not just because I'm gay, but because I'm out. Because I decided to say, I have a boyfriend. I don't have a girlfriend, Isabella, or whatever her name was. Isabel. Who was a part-time employee of mine. So, Ken, do you have a girlfriend? No, I have a boyfriend. His name is Yvonne. He's Brazilian. And, of course, you know, Yvonne used to came in, and I say, hey, this is my boyfriend, Yvonne, you asked about. And she didn't like that. So, you know, like I said, you can't, you know, whatever, Sharita. But as it turns out, that little act of disobedience cost me my job. However, I mean, in the long run, it worked out because that job really did suck the life out of me. So, in a way, it was a godsend because it forced me to do something else. At the same time, I wish I had been able to, like, rectify. I mean, it just felt so raped after all those years of giving 125%. I mean, and what I'm talking about, I mean, retail, you expect to work 80 hours a week during Christmas because, you know, it's retail. But you're not expected to work 60 hours a week during, like, other times of year on a regular basis, okay? And what they did is that because I was salary, you know, they could do that. And so they kept on cutting down the payroll until it was like just my, basically, you know, I had enough for my salary, my assistant manager, and the third key. And even the third key, okay? That's what we used to call them, the third key. Her salary, or his salary at the time, him, because we had a female third key for a long time, he wasn't able to work a full time. You know, he was hired as full time, and then it went down to part time, and then I had a couple part timers, and it just wasn't good, and it wasn't done right, and it just makes me angry. So I'm continuing that. But anyway, talking about coming out, it's coming out month, and gay people are, it's like a masquerade, okay? Sometimes, if you're not out, it's like living a masquerade because you're going around town. Even me, it's Kenty, I'm out, right? Everybody knows I'm gay. Big deal, right? Well, for some of you, it is a big deal, and, you know, you can go fuck yourself. But anyway, I was on the train, you know, I meet people all the time, you know, hello there, you know, I see people on the train. And I still feel like I'm masquerading because, you know, there's no, it's not like, you know, that's the thing about being gay, right? I don't want to have to keep on saying, I'm gay. It's not really that important. But when you meet people, there's a natural way of meeting people. You see them on the train, you talk to them, right? So there's this one, you know, guy, he's married, he's just starting a new job in town. He sat down near me on the train. He's like, oh, I just started doing this. He's really talkative. And he's nice, right? And we're talking. And I sort of keep my distance, you know. And the other day he's like, oh, did you see the game? Are you seeing the game? You're doing this? All these straight things, you know. It's like, you know, and he has a family, you know. He talks about having a family. And I guess that's my opportunity to bring up John and, you know, our family with Jose. But I didn't feel like I wanted to, you know. Maybe because I didn't really care, you know. But at the same time, it's like, am I doing that because I don't want to, like, you know, I've been in situations where sometimes I feel like I have to just say it because otherwise I'm going to, you know, invest myself too much in people and then get fucked over. You know, I've had a friend. Okay, I'm going to talk about two friends. One is a friend of mine's a girl. She's a couple years younger than me. Very, I would think liberal. Or I used to think was liberal. I mean, she came from a very wealthy family. And she got, I don't know how this happened. She went to New York and she lived in a squat. And got involved with the psychic TV crap. I mean, there's a group, psychic TV, and read William Burroughs. That's actually how I found out about William Burroughs. I didn't ever knew anything about Naked Lunch, and so she told me about it, and that's how I got involved with reading William Burroughs. So we were good friends, and she lived in New York City, and I went to New York City and visited her a couple times while she was in there. I was living in Somerville. She used to come up to Boston, stay with me. I would stay with her. So, you know, she had met a guy, and she was dating him. She's really serious about it and getting ready to marry him. And I had met John. Now, I didn't really talk to her about being gay. I mean, I just assumed she knew. Like, I assumed people knew I was gay. That's another thing. For people who know me, I mean, I never dated women, right? And I never denied being gay. I don't know if that's the same thing. But, you know, it's the same thing. It's like, don't you hate, for gay people, this is, don't you hate just having to always say, I'm gay? I mean, you just don't want to do that all the time, right? You know, you want people to just realize you're gay and that's it. But anyway, so I go and visit her. I said, Marnie, oops, I said her name. Well, there must be thousands of them, right? Who lived in a squat and lived in New York. But anyway, I said, Marnie, I said, I met John. He's my boyfriend. And then she got really like, weird, you know? And I said, well, next time we're in New York, you know, I used to call her all the time. And I said, next time we're in New York, let's meet. Oh, yeah, sure. So I called her the next time we were in New York. I said, we're going to be there at this date. I called her. She didn't answer her phone. And the whole weekend. And then I never heard from her again. And I remember her saying something once. And this sort of gave me an indication. This is when I was in New York with her once, and she's talking about gay stuff. Just, it's so unnatural. You know, the dick doesn't belong in the anus. You know, it only belongs in the vagina. And I just was like, Marnie, there's more to homosexuality than anal sex, which I've said before. There's a capacity of love between two men. It's not all about anal sex. I mean, what is wrong with people? You know, it's like they have such... It's not even just closed mind. It is a, where are their minds? You know, homosexuality is about love. It's not about anal sex. Okay. Though there are homosexuals who are involved with anal sex. Okay. It just, and so, you know, I lost touch with Marnie, you know, another friend, Ted, maybe his real name. So Ted is an older guy. I met him. He has a wife. And I met him at the record store, the classical record store I was working at. And he was a religious guy. And I knew he was religious. He prayed. He did his praying before food and stuff. But he was also kind of hip because he talked about things, you know. So, you know, and again, I never talked to him about being gay, but I just assumed people knew because I didn't have girls coming in. I didn't date, and that was that. So, I mean, he used to go to the opera. He was a musician, and he took me to the Metropolitan Opera, him and some friends from the record store, right? He said, let's go to the Metropolitan Opera. I never thought in my life that I would go to the Metropolitan Opera. Lulu was playing. He said, yeah, let's do it. You know, here, give me the money. I'll buy the tickets. We'll drive up. I just couldn't believe he just did that. It was. That's when I realized New York's a lot closer than I thought, and ability to see things like that. You know, like I was my world was opening up. So Ted, you know, I used to call him all the time, and I had lost touch with him. He actually, the last time I'd seen him was at my sister's wedding. He was invited because he was doing the music. So you know, you lose touch with people. So I had found his email. Online, I was doing a Google search, and I emailed him, and he's like, oh, Ken, I was so glad to hear from you. I thought we were lost, and da, 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 da. And he said about what was going on in his life since the wedding and stuff. So I thought, well, I'm going to write to him I'm going to tell him the truth about my life. I'm not going to masquerade, you know. So I told him I sent him an email about meeting John, having Jose, having the dogs, and this, that, and the other thing. And I never heard from him again. And, you know, people who are like that, it's just, you invest time in people, right? And then to find out that they are, can do that to you, shun you, basically. Well, I guess, that's their prerogative, which is fine. But as a gay male, right? I mean, as gay people, we have to be very selective of who we are involved and who we involve ourselves with, because why waste your time in investing your time and energy in people if they're going to shun you at the very end, right? So I don't know, and it is not even about whether they, I don't know what they think. I don't know. It just, bothers me. Really, it's hurtful. Really, it's a hurtful thing. So even Kenty, who is out, is anything, and is on the web as a gay podcaster. I mean, still, you live in a masquerade, slightly. And that's why, they say gay people love Halloween as a generalization, okay? But it is true. I mean, you get the, I love Halloween too, but I don't dress up anymore. But I would if I went out to, I can go to the two guys' Halloween party. But I can't this year because I'm going to the Pod Camp Boston. Maybe next year. And, I used to, I don't know. So anyway, you understand? You understand? Understand me? So anyway, I'm going to start the show, and I hope you enjoy it. See you later.
Lash! That's Brenda Starr you hear, finishing up her scoop just for you.
Brenda Starr. Well, kids, last time we left you, Jack Grant had the alarm on Jack Grant's heart monitor, went eee! And he was pronounced dead. And in fact, Jack Grant died. Brenda gives him a kiss and says he was a good guy and cries. It was very sad. The physician asks Brenda to go out and see the media, but she refuses. And he gives Brenda Jack's keys and wallet, etc., to his house. Right before he died, he told Brenda that all of that stuff, all the secrets that he knew about were on his computer. My tongue, it hurts. I bit my tongue. Brenda goes to Jack's house and enters and starts reading his diaries on his computer. And he writes all about how he wrote his editorials. He writes about the presidential run he had and about his movie fame. Then she comes to a file named Brenda Starr. And he writes that Brenda is beautiful, but would be more beautiful if she were less elusive, self-righteous, and exacting. But, he continues, she calls upon me to be better than I am. And for that, I'm truly grateful. So Brenda has a little tear. And Jack, and she says, isn't it awful that you miss the people most after they're gone? You realize how great they were? So Brenda is about to email Scotty, the file. She's on the phone with Scotty. And this file has a list of all the powerful people in politics, business, and the media who are involved with this presidential run. And Tina comes in and pulls the plug on the computer. Tina tells her, this is too big for us. You'll be killed. They're mine. They belong to Titan Times because Ernest, worked for me. This is a Titan Times computer. So she has these guys take all that stuff away, and she says we can't reveal this. And Brenda says, but we have to reveal the story about how Jack, as a presidential candidate, was scamming the nation, being invented.
And Tina says, yeah, that's about as exciting as Lindsay Lohan being a drunk driver. You know, it's like, it's not a scandal. Because we know what happens, which is really sad. So basically, it's too big for us. It's going to kill us. It's going to kill us if we do anything. So Brenda says, journalists who don't take risks to make the truth public may as well be PR agents. So everything's confiscated. And we find out that Tina has fired Brenda, or at least accepted her resignation. And she says, well, I'm sorry it had to end this way. But Brenda has found a newspaper to which to that she can publish the truth. Before Tina came in and confiscated everything, she had printed out some of the diaries. So she had some information. So she's going back to her old newspaper, The Flash, who's going to publish her story about Jack Grant. So Brenda's in her office. She's leaving, cleaning up, and she sees Jack's cowboy hat on her desk. If you remember, she went to see him on the set. He was making some cowboy movie, and he gave her a hat. So she gives it to Scotty, who says, you know, he's going to miss her very much and that she was the best thing for the paper. And she says, we need more cowboy reporters out there, so shoot the bad guys and tell the truth. So Scotty says, you're the best thing for the paper. So she says bye to everybody. So then she meets Spiff. Remember Spiff, the gay guy? He's been in many adventures with Brenda. So they're talking. Spiff says, why do you want to leave Hollywood? This is where all the important people are. And she says, no, I want to be able to go back and do my and write real stories. And then she asks him if he would like to work for her. And that's where we're at. So will Spiff go with Brenda Starr back to the East Coast, I'm imagining? I think it's the East Coast. To work for her? We'll see next time.
Deep Flatus, the special features from theflatusshow.com. Jose and I invite you to come to theflatusshow.com and sign up.
Every day is just another day that seems to start and end with the blues. Every single thing I do or say seems to recall all I had to lose. For I never knew how wonderful you were when I called you wonderful one. I never knew how much I needed you till my dreams were shattered and done. Oh, how I miss the thrill of your charms and the wonderful love that I found in your arms. Oh, I never knew how wonderful you were till I lost you, wonderful one. Through the mist of broken dreams and tears, your wondrous love seems ever to shine, bringing memories of bygone years, of happiness that once was all mine. For I never knew how wonderful you were when I called you wonderful one. I never knew how much I needed you till my dreams were shattered and done.
charms and the wonderful love that I found in your arms. Oh, I never knew how wonderful you were till I lost you, wonderful one.
Oh, little Audrey says, save for a rainy day. She says, but every time it rains, she spends what she puts away. She knows her proverbs, A to Z, and knows the good they bring.
But when she has to follow them,
well, that's another thing. Oh, little Audrey says, while the sun is out, make hay. Though she's not immense, there's a lot of sense in what little Audrey has to say.
One day, little Audrey was standing on the corner just a-crying, and a-crying, when along comes a cop who said, "Little Audrey, why are you crying?" And little Audrey said, "I've lost my papa." The cop said, "Why, little Audrey? I wouldn't cry about that. There's your papa, right across the street, leaning against the bank building." Little Audrey was overjoyed. Without even looking at the traffic, she started across the street. Along came a big 2-ton truck that ran over little Audrey and killed her dead. The cop just laughed and laughed. He knew all the time that was not little Audrey's papa leaning against the bank building. Doris Lessing. Sounds like Brenda Starr, didn't it? I did that on purpose. So anyway, this isn't Doris Lessing. There's a new book by Doris Lessing called The Cleft. Or The Clefts, something like that. Let me see here. Let me look at the Wikipedia entry. What the hell? Where the hell is that? Anyway, I bought it. I was looking for The Cleft, it's called. I was looking for the new, what was it? The hell is it? Philip Roth novel for Johnny. Here's Jose. And, the new Philip Roth novel for Johnny, and I saw The Cleft sitting next to it. I thought, new Doris Lessing novel. And I had started reading her, there's a group of five novels which go together. It's a series called The Canopus in Argos, I think, something like that. The Canopus in Argos archive series. It includes the novels Shikasta, The Marriages Between Zones 3, 4, and 5, The Syrian Experiments, The Making of the Representative for Planet 8, and The Sentimental Agents in the Volyan Empire. As an aside, Philip Glass wrote an opera based on two of these novels, The Marriages Between Zones 3, 4, and 5, and The Making of the Representative for Planet 8. I had started reading them and never finished. I have the book on my shelf. I'm gonna maybe try finishing it since I am now halfway through The Cleft, which I think is really fascinating. It's a book about gender. It's set in ancient Rome, it's not really set in ancient Rome. This is how it works out. It's sort of like a rediscovered myth. There is a Roman senator who has dug through the old libraries and has found these old manuscripts, which proposes there seems to be a history of a different beginning of the world, not beginning of the world, but beginning of humankind, and it states that there was a group of women who lived at the sea, and they had girl babies all the time. It was parthenogenesis. And then suddenly they started giving birth to males. And these females thought they were monsters, so they would mutilate them and kill them, put them on a rock to die, because apparently these women, if they had a child which was infirm or retarded or whatever, they would kill it. They would stick it on the killing rock for the vulture, for the eagles to eat. Needless to say, the boy babies are carried off by the eagles, and you know, in the beginning, as the eagles ate them. But then, for some reason, the eagles started taking them to the valley, and these boy babies, and they were raised by does. The milk of does. The doe came out and took pity on these poor babies. So eventually, these clefs, who don't do much, they sort of just wallow around in the ocean, and they're fat apparently. They look like walruses, and they swim, and they're very good swimmers. They go to see what happens, where the eagles are taking the babies, and they discover that these boys have created their own little enclave. So they realize that what the boys' penises are for, they're called them squirts, is to impregnate them, because they had seen sea creatures do this. So they go to the valley and they proceed to have lots of sex. And it's not passionate, it's not emotional, it's just purely physical. And the women come back, they're pregnant, and so they start giving birth to the new children, and they're different. You know, they describe how these new babies are different. The parthenogenesis babies are quiet and swim, and, you know, but these new babies are wild and wiry, as the human beings are. And that's where I'm at, basically. I think it's brilliant. I think it's really interesting. It's probably a myth that is closer to reality. It makes sense that any race, any living being, that it's the female is first, because the female can give birth. The male is important. I wonder what would happen to the human race if, for some reason, and this would happen slowly, like, let's say males declined to such an extent, would women, through nature, start giving birth to, you know, girl babies naturally, right? Until eventually there's a boy baby being born. You know? I don't know. I'm just guessing. I'm just thinking. I'm fantasizing. You know, because the human body is resilient. It has come against all sorts of odds. It doesn't make sense that we even exist, since we're so damn complicated. You'd think, evolutionarily speaking, I guess. And I guess you can't make sense of it because it's evolution, right? It's nature. But it would be the least complicated creatures which would survive. I mean, we're so complicated, we have to have air conditioners and stuff like that. You know, we really don't need air conditioners. But you know what I mean? We really do have a lot of problems, you know? I mean, food allergies and all this stuff. We wouldn't survive 2 minutes if we didn't have all of modern trappings. But is that part of evolution, you know? Our ability to tend to ourselves, you know? I don't know. What is the reason for this technology? To escape the planet like a seed pod, like a milkweed pod? You know, maybe that's what the planet is really. We're doing this stuff to eventually escape the planet, and we're going to seed the universe. It's a nice science fiction theme, you know, and it's been talked about before. But Doris Lessing, she's been called a feminist. I'm not really sure what she considers herself, though. She's British. She was born in Persia when her father worked there as a bank, some bank guy at the Persian bank, because the British were in there. And then they lived in southern Rhodesia, and then they came back to England, it looks like. She was married twice. She belonged to a communist book club. I guess that's where you share the same book. You read it all at once. everybody takes turns turning the pages, so they all have equal amount of work. Okay, so her most famous book, her first book, was The Grass is Singing, and her breakthrough work is called The Golden Notebook. It was written in 1962. So I recommend to all my listeners to go and buy The Cleft and read it yourself. There have been some really virulent reviews out there about this. The Washington Post wrote this, not nasty review, but it's just a bad review. Ursula Le Guin had bad things to say about it. I don't get it. I think it's a brilliant book, and I love it. But who am I, you know? I'm just telling you how I feel. So, sorry about that. So, anyway. The Cleft. Go buy it.
And wet, had no sunshine to fling about, and lots of rain to forget. Wore my flannels and stayed indoors like a bird in a tree. How I shivered and prayed indoors, till one day you yelled to me, "Hey, young fella, better close your old umbrella. Have a glorious day throwing rubbers away, 'cause it ain't gonna rain no more. Say, young fella, put your raincoat in the cellar. While you're tying your tie, take a peek at the sky. Well, it ain't gonna rain no more. Look at that brave little rainbow, fighting those clouds up above. I'm in the ring, Mr. Rainbow, with a horseshoe in my glove. Hey, young fella, better close your old umbrella. Give your trousers a hitch, 'cause we're gonna be rich, and it ain't gonna rain no more. Do, 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 do. Young
a fella, better close your old umbrella. Give your trousers a hitch, 'cause we're gonna be rich, and it ain't gonna rain no more.
Hi, this is J.W. Richard of Mandrake Society Radio, and my good friend Kenty brings ukulele, the Bible, and flatulence into podcasting. What more can you ask for? You're listening to The Flata Show.
What's cooking? That's right, now for the cooking portion of The Flata Show.
So last week, I had I got together a dinner party for some friends. And my plan was to have a roast beef with, what else to have? Roast beef, baked potatoes, and green beans. And I made a wonderful pie, which is my own creation. So basically, I'll talk to you about two things, the roast and the pie, because baked potatoes are pretty simple, and the green beans are just fresh green beans, okay? Now, when I go to the market for meat, and I really should, I'm going to make an aside here, I want to learn more about the different cuts of meat and how to cook them, and which is best, which cuts are better for other, like how the best ways of cooking various cuts of meat. So for me, currently, I go to the market and I rely on what the labels say. So I found a roast. I think it was a 5-pound roast. It said bottom round roast, good for oven roasting, right? So I figure, well, that's what it says, right? Should be good. So I bought it and I, you know, came home with it. Since I bought it, you know, I brought it home. And I figured, well, I want to find out the best way to cook it. Maybe it needs to be marinated or some special thing because, you know, there are different ways to cook meat. So I went online to find out this. So I type in bottom round roast, and almost every website I came to said bottom round roast is not really good for roasting. It's good for pot roast. I'm thinking to myself, Christ, damn. You know, I don't want a pot roast. I want a roast. And they said, yeah, if you roast this thing, it's going to be tough as nails. So I was sort of disappointed. However, I did find one website which said it is okay to roast, but it has to be done rare. You know, if you want a well-done roast, then this is not your roast. This is best rare. So I said, well, that's what I have to do. So our oven is kind of weird. It said to roast it at 350 degrees. Hold on, I got something in my tooth. It said to roast it at 350 degrees. But we had to turn our oven up to 375 degrees. It's an electric oven. Doesn't work. It should work. So, where was I now? So, what I did is I brought it to room temperature, and I left it out. I brought it to room temperature for a few hours. I had it, I had it in its container, wrapped up in plastic, and I brought it out, covered it with a towel, and let it sit for like 2 hours. And then I took it out of there and patted it dry, and then I salted it salted it and put pepper on it, a liberal amount of salt and pepper. Then I stuck it in the roasting pan with I don't know what you call it, the roaster. It has this metal thing in there that you lay it on so it doesn't touch the bottom. And I put it in the oven, 350 degree oven, well, actually 375, and roasted it for, it was about an hour, 6:15, 7:15. Maybe it was an hour and 15 minutes. I roasted it until the thermometer read 120 degrees. Now, it could be between 120 and 125. That's fine, but that's rare. And then I brought it out and let it sit for 15 minutes. And I sliced it. Now, it was rare, but it was It was perfectly done, actually, for me. I like my beef rare. It was perfectly done. And so that I recommend the bottom round roast as and roasting it in the oven as long as it's rare. Because it was tender. It was tender as anything. So the pie that went with this was it's a pecan pie, but I used walnuts. And it's my own special creation of the pecan pie, which you too can make yourself at home. What I do is basically I follow the Karo syrup recipe, except instead of Karo syrup, I use my homemade caramel sauce, which is basically I caramelize sugar, add 4 tablespoons of sugar. I have a cup of sugar, cup and a half of sugar, with half a cup of water. Bring that to, you know, a boil, caramelize it. I think it goes up to like 300 degrees, 320 degrees. Then I add some butter, 4 tablespoons of butter to that, let it melt. Then I add a can of evaporated milk. Now, my recipe says 5 ounce can, but I could add a whole 12 ounce can and it'll be fine sauce. So I add the sauce and heat that up until it's the – because when you put cold liquid into the that hot sugar, it sort of seizes up. So you have to bring it to the burner again so it gets smooth. And then you just let that cool down. Pour out a cup of it for the pie and reserve the rest for ice cream or whatever you want to do. Or actually, I used it for the top of the pie. As well. So that's basically it. And I used walnuts. Oh, another thing I did, which I forgot to tell you, is I add about an eighth of a cup of semi-sweet chocolate chips to the bottom of the pie shell. Now, I find that the best pie shells to use are frozen pie shells. That's the best one. But if you can't do that, line your pie pan with a dough, right? You know, your pie dough, and put it in the freezer for a little bit. It doesn't have to freeze all the way through, but it's really good if it's cold. And I also would swab the bottom of the pie pan with egg white, so the liquid doesn't permeate to the bottom of the crust. So then you bake it in the oven. A 350-degree oven for about, it says 45 to 50 minutes, but mine took less time than that, until it sort of, like, puffs up. You know when it's done. Just follow the rest of the Karo syrup recipe, but use my caramel syrup instead of the Karo syrup. Another thing I've noticed this time is you might need to have more caramel syrup than a cup. It might be a cup and a half. So you have to work that out. But you use the caramel syrup instead of the Karo syrup. It comes out delicious.
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
Another 5-minute mystery. Identity known only to yourselves. You will remain within your secret selves till midnight, when you shall unmask and reveal your true selves. But for 3 hours, the mystery of the unknown is yours. I see all manner of people tonight. There is Misto, the magician, a gypsy, a peasant, a statesman, a clown such as myself. And there is Cinderella, who at midnight will find that dreams must end. But till midnight, give yourselves to the music, the wine, and the dancing.
have it. The magic of a sorcerer who jumped from apprentice to master in 10 easy lessons.
Oh, show us another, Miss Doe.
Oh, I do not have the time. It is nearly midnight.
Can magicians stop time?
Not in the society I belong to.
Just one more, Miss Doe. We've hardly seen you all night.
I've been walking the air searching for my inspiration.
Miss Doe, come here quickly.
Forgive me, good people. The master of the rebels calls. What is it?
I was just walking in the garden, getting some air, and guess what I found?
How should I know? I'm only a magician.
The girl disguised as Cinderella. She's dead.
What?
What'll we do?
Look, it's almost midnight. Lock the body in a room until I get everyone to unmask. Don't let anyone suspect anything. Then we'll call the police.
Okay, I'll be right back.
It is almost midnight. Prepare to unmask.
Wonderful.
And as you reveal your real selves to one another, the royal prince will become a beggar, the peasant a wealthy man, the gypsy a statesman, the clown a respected philosopher, and Cinderella, poor Cinderella, her horse-drawn coach to become a pumpkin, the birthmark of poverty to show beneath her tired eyes. Midnight! Unmask! I, Mr. the Magician, stand revealed!
Yes, revealed as a murderer!
How does the clown know that Mr. the Magician is the murderer of the woman masquerading as Cinderella? In just a moment, we'll know, but first...
No, but you must have been, to let the proof of your guilt slip out.
You'd have a good case if you could prove it.
Why did you say birthmark of her poverty beneath her tired eyes? Why such a rich metaphor for Cinderella and a meager one for the others?
She interested me.
To the extent that you knew there was a birthmark beneath her right eye. You didn't know who she was. No one did. She remained masked all evening, yet you knew what lay beneath that mask. Don't tell me that was coincidence. You saw her unmasked.
Yes. Yes, I didn't mean to. It all happened so suddenly.
You should have perfected a disappearing act, friend. It would have stood you in good stead right now.
Apple Picking by Robert Frost from his collection of poems North of Boston. My long two-pointed ladder's sticking through a tree toward heaven still, and there's a barrel that I didn't fill beside it, and there may be two or three apples I didn't pick upon some bough, but I am done with apple picking now. Essence of winter sleep is on the night. The scent of apples, I am drowsing off. I cannot rub the strangeness from my sight. I got from looking through a pane of glass I skimmed this morning from the drinking trowel and held against the world of hoary grass. It melted, and I let it fall and break, but I was well upon my way to sleep before it fell, and I could tell what form my dreaming was about to take. Magnified apples appear and disappear, stem end and blossom end, and every fleck of russet showing clear. My instep arch not only keeps the ache, it keeps the pressure of a ladder round. I feel the ladder sway as the boughs bend, and I keep hearing from the cellar bin the rumbling sound of load on load of apples coming in. For I have had too much of apple picking. I am overtired of the great harvest I myself desired. There were 10,000 fruit to touch, cherish in hand, lift down, and not let fall. For all that struck the earth, no matter if not bruised or spiked with stubble, went surely to the cider apple heap as of no worth.
One can see what will trouble the sleep of mine, whatever sleep it is. Were he not gone, the woodchuck could say whether it's like his long sleep, as I describe its coming on, or just some human sleep.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
To one another, the royal prince will become a beggar, the peasant a wealthy man, the gypsy a statesman, the clown a respected philosopher, and Cinderella, poor Cinderella, her horse-drawn coach to become a pumpkin, the birthmark of poverty to show beneath her tired eyes. Midnight! Unmask! I, Mistro the Magician, stand revealed!
Yes, revealed as a murderer!